Tonight's episode of Colors of the Dark is brought to you by the new movie Hokum. Screen Anarchy called it a nonstop fright factory, now available on digital. From Damien McCarthy, director of Oddity, Hokum stars Adam Scott in a profoundly terrifying horror film, said The Wrap. When reclusive novelist Ohm Bauman retreats to a remote Irish inn to scatter his parents' ashes, the staff's tales of ancient witch haunting the honeymoon suite takes hold of his mind. Soon, disturbing visions and shocking disappearances draw him into a nightmarish confrontation with the darkest corners of his past. Slash Film called Hokum a straight-up horror thrill ride, and Fangoria noted that it is scary enough to make a seasoned viewer jump. Experience Hokum everywhere you rent or buy movies. Hello, and welcome to Fangoria's Colors of the Dark podcast. I am your co-host, Rebecca McKendry, and with me, it's his last week of school, so he's a little rough this week, but he is here and ready to go. Elric Kane, how you doing?
Forever frazzled. That's how I am. That's
forever frazzled.
Yes, I like to be permanently frazzled. But yeah,
I'm surviving. You're almost done, because I've been like a week out, 2 weeks since USC ended, and I feel awesome. I feel great.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm happy for you that you feel great, and
you're on your way.
And I'm still living in the back rooms, but that's okay. I'll get out. I'll emerge soon enough. But yeah, I'm excited. This is our last show for a while for some of the summer. So we're
about 6 weeks.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll I'm still... taking off 2 months. You're taking off 6 weeks. That's the difference between us, work ethic wise.
So I'll be back in 6 weeks with some type of an amazing co-host. I'm thinking I may have to ask Pulitzer Prize winning novelist Daniel Krauss or somebody like that to join me for when I come back. And then Elric will be joining us shortly after that. So yeah, I'll have to find somebody good in the meantime.
But we'll still have some deep cuts flowing in between now and then, both new ones, and we'll put some of the old ones in the feed for people who've never heard of them. They'll be kind of fun.
Yeah. And a lot of our new stuff ends up on deep cuts during the summer as well, because we're still watching new stuff and we're like itching to talk about it. So it always goes there too. So yeah. So you're still going to get episodes, even if we're taking a couple of weeks off.
I want to jump in with the start to summer because it's a road trip movie. Did you see Passenger?
I did not see Passenger. You know, this was one of those where I was really excited about it when I read the premise.
Yeah.
But then the reviews started rolling in and I did not make it a top priority for the weekend.
It's one. The thing about reviews, and obviously we could see a good or bad review of anything and it could put us off. But that's the thing I'm more worried about. Not that they're going to be right, but that's going to put me off seeing something. So and because it does, I'm like you. Like, so I went to Passenger before, like on the Thursday night. And I think that's like my sweet spot for new movies now, because I haven't heard anything and I don't really want to. And as soon as I do, it does color it. So I'd seen a couple things right before I went there. It, big fans on the show of Andre Overdahl. We've liked almost all of his movies and loved a couple of his movies. Autopsy Jane Doe being one of the scariest movies. And the little bit of the trailer I saw, I didn't see much, kind of looked like more pushing into that kind of what the kids call the elevated horror. It certainly is not. This is the most jump scary base. This was a real disappointment, but it had some stuff about it that was interesting. The opening sequence is really quite solid and kind of scary, and that's why I thought the whole film was going to be. It's two guys on a long road trip. One of them keeps having to pee, and the other guy give him shit about it. And if they were the movie, I think I might have stayed in the movie.
Oh my God, it's like you and me.
Yeah, it was pretty entertaining, and they're funny. And then one of them sees a guy kind of hitching on the street, but he kind of keeps moving around his place. Eventually, the other guy comes back from peeing, and all sorts of chaos breaks out, and it creates this kind of what feels like an endless loop that they're going to be. One of them's going to be on the road with this thing haunting them in a sense. And that part I was really intrigued. And then it just cuts to a very generic style of filmmaking where they're a Brooklyn brownstone's up for rent and we're going to go live in our van for the next few years. And the guy and his, new fiance and everything about it just becomes instantly quite generic on a character level, like really fast and kind of surprising given everything else about it. And it's also one of those, and this is not beyond its pleasures. Don't get me wrong. There are things in this. There's a couple sequences, one involving a movie screening in the woods. That's really cool. A couple just good set pieces. There's one interesting one that kind of doesn't have payoff in the, in a Big Lots, parking lot that just has kind of cool repetition. But what it is they start to see a symbol drawn on their van. They come across the crash site of the opening scene at one point, and the guy seems to be still alive. And then they notice one of them sees kind of a refraction or a quick kind of jumpy version of what is this Hitcher character. And so it's kind of like they've been marked now for their for wherever they go, this thing's going to follow. But the, when I left It Follows with you and Dave Parker, I'll never forget because, you know, you guys were complaining about the rules and I was like, I don't need rules. And in this movie, I'm complaining about the rules because it really bothered me that it felt like there were no real, like if he only showed up on the road, I would have been cool because this is a movie about being on the road. But then he's in the Big Lots parking lot. He's in a weird camper RV place that they go to at some point. And I'm like, I think this is a movie you should see because of your camper life stuff. And there's some of that's interesting. But let me just put this. This is my biggest thing about this movie. At one point in the middle of this movie, they're smart enough to cast Melissa Leo, one of our finest actors, an Academy Award winner or nominee, I can't recall. I think winner. And even she cannot say dialogue. Like even an Academy Award winner, this is one of the lines in the movies. She turns to them when she hardly knows anything about what they're going through, but they mention something and she goes, "People don't take trips. Trips take people."
Wait,
And like,
what?
people don't take trips. Trips take people is what she
Oh, I
said.
heard you. It just doesn't make sense.
Okay, so she says this out loud, and all I thought about in that moment was like, you know, that's something you put on the poster, not in a person's mouth. Like that's literally the tagline for a movie. It's not the thing that a person can really say. And like you can get away, but when you have an actor this good, and she almost comes off the worst in this movie because everything she says becomes kind of chirpy. It's just kind of cheesy and disappointing. But they also do delve into something that could have been super cool in a more lo-fi, I think, version of this movie, which is the Hobo Code, which when you research it, you know, is a real thing.
Oh, it's fascinating.
Largely coming from the Great Depression and warnings for people like, hey, this way there might be free food or inhospitable, you know, locals ahead, or this is so people were surviving using trains and all this kind of stuff. So they kind of co-opt those symbols in this movie and make it and then make that into the supernatural. And it's like a part of me didn't feel great about that because it does feel like, not that I have an issue with, you know, co-opting historic things for supernatural movies, but it just felt a little dumbed down for what could have been a really cool idea. So I think I have more less problems with the directing in some ways than I do with just kind of the way it all comes together. But there are some interesting things. I do think you would find, and a lot of it is just like he's got a St. Christopher coin on his car, the main guy. And of course, what is the one thing the creature is going to be scared of? The St. Christopher is the one thing it fears.
Wait,
It's just,
what?
yeah,
Okay.
exactly. So it's like that kind of coincidental kind of thing. So it definitely is not the kind of if you're looking for that more the modern A24 vibe horror films that we've been seeing. I felt like the trailer kind of promised a little bit of that, but it's definitely much more a little bit more simple than that. But I do think some people are going to have fun. I do think it's not a bad road trip get your summer started, but it did not work for me really as a film, unfortunately.
Wow.
Passenger.
Yeah, I will catch this one when it gets to VOD, sadly. Excuse me, one sec. Ernie, please cut that or don't. I don't care. It's allergy.
Or she'll hear from someone
I'll
saying,
hear. Somebody will be like, oh my God, you yelled at your kid during the episode. And I'm
"Had
going to
out
be like,
fun."
yeah, he was like trying to bust in my locked door. I have a lock on my office and the kids have fucked with it to the point that they can like override it. And yeah, so that was fun. So yeah, feel free to keep it in actually. Okay, so continuing with that conversation about reviews tainting whether or not you go see it, I'm now going to go to one that did that for me, and that is The Bride. Okay, so this movie, I was so fucking psyched about this. This is Maggie Gyllenhaal's kind of directorial debut doing Bride of Frankenstein. And this came out back in March, which tells you how long it took me to fucking circle back to this movie. And the reason is because, like, I was like all prepared, like, yes, I'm gonna go see this opening weekend. I'm gonna take my daughter. This looks all like feminist and cool and punk rock. And then the reviews start pouring out and they're scathing. And I was like, you know, I'll wait and see it on VOD. And here we are now, like 2, 3 months later, and I'm finally seeing it on VOD. Were the reviews all apt? Well, kind of, but at the same time, I will say there is a version of this movie that is my favorite movie in the entire world, and that's where this one gets weird. This is a dynamite cast. Jesse Buckley, Christian Bale, Jake Gyllenhaal, Peter Skarsgård, Penelope Cruz are kind of your main characters. And they're in really, really fun roles. Like, it's just really bonkers characters. It opens with Mary Shelley trapped in purgatory. And she is talking about how she was all oppressed throughout her life. And she wrote the story that society made her write. But here's the story that she really wanted to write. And then we flash to Jessie Buckley in the 1930s, who's like this party girl with loose morals at a bar. And all of a sudden, Mary Shelley is like, I'm going to possess her. And she possesses Jessie Buckley. And suddenly, Jessie Buckley is fighting for her own body while she is being possessed by Mary Shelley. Now, I will say this is dynamite acting because it's Jessie Buckley being all like, whew, I don't know what came over me. I can't. And like, all this British obscenity is just suddenly emerging, and then she's bouncing back and forth. Well, the night continues with her being possessed by a really salty, irate Mary Shelley. And at some point, she gets in a fight, she falls downstairs and dies. Now, coincidentally, at the same time in the 1930s, so that was all the Mary Shelley from the 1800s possessing Jessie Buckley in the 1930s. Coincidentally, at the same time of the 1930s, Frankenstein, who is a real person, who is a real creature, who was actually created by a doctor back in the 1800s, and it's just kind of accepted as fact, has made his way to Chicago, has found this doctor who he thinks could reanimate him a bride because he's lonely. And so he convinces this female doctor in the 1930s to find a female corpse to reanimate so he can have a spouse. There's a lot of kind of tenuous stuff happening here, but bear with me. They, of course, find Jessie Buckley's body and they're like, okay, we're going to bring her back. Now, at that point, Jessie Buckley comes back, and instead of being like pissed off and no, I don't want to marry this guy, she's like, holy shit, we're both all fucked up looking now. Let's go do crimes together. And it turns into a bride. She goes by the name of Ida, and Frank kind of become this Bonnie and Clyde kind of chaos spree sweeping their way through Chicago. And then they also get involved in this government corruption, organized crime that has killed a bunch, like dozens of women, to try to silence them from like mafia stuff that they witnessed. And so they get involved in that, trying to uncover it. And they're just going wild in this like crazy Bonnie and Clyde crime spree throughout Chicago. It leads them to Niagara Falls at one point. Okay. If
Wait,
you
is she still Mary Shelley once she's resurrected or not?
Okay, so this is where the film fell apart for me. If
Yeah.
it had just been that, I'm bringing back a bride for you in the 1930s, and fuck yeah, we're both fucked up. The world's fucked up. Let's go crazy and have fun. I would have fucking loved this movie because it is so punk rock, so feminist, 1930s, just the world of shit, burn it to the ground. And it is brilliant. Where it gets weird is that the Jessie Buckley character is channeling three different personalities back and forth. So she is Mary Shelley still. Mary Shelley is constantly coming in. And then she's also the original girl that she was before she fell down the stairs, Penelope. And then she is the new creation that has been brought back to life, Ida. And so in any given sentence, she will volley back and forth between all three of those. And you're supposed to pick it up based on her mannerisms and her accent. But it just comes across as her kind of chewing the scenery while everyone else is in this kind of cool Sid and Nancy tale about two reanimated corpses who are like, fuck it all, burn it to the ground. That's where it gets weird. And so, like I said, there's a version of this that is so Mickey Mallory, Sid Nancy, Bonnie Clyde, just great, kind of chaos spree all through the 1930s. But then there's just so much that is brought in with that Jessie Buckley character that it is hard to keep up with what's happening. And it just gets so huge and over the top, much like a Frankenstein. It feels like all these different parts were brought together, but there's like one too many arms. And so that's where it kind of goes off. I will say this is an interesting one to watch. Like, I highly recommend watching this, but kind of go in knowing that there's going to be parts that just don't work. Like, there's some awkwardness to it too. But the actual conceit of this, I could have seen reading the script and been like, oh my God, this is great. Because if you're not reading, the accent changes midway through the sentences. It just reads as like, pissed off people in the 1930s wanting to destroy the system. And I can see the script being outrageous. So, that said, Jessie Buckley is all over the place, but she has given a hell of a performance. So there's a lot
Love
there.
her.
So,
She's so good.
yeah, it's worth checking out, I gotta say. It's definitely doing some interesting stuff. So, yeah, The Bride. I'm glad I finally caught up with it.
And the trailer is very punk. I remember seeing the first trailer and being like, "Ooh, I'm in." And I was the same way. It was like the, I was ready to go to it, and then the word of mouth is mixed. I mean, some people I know really, really love that movie, but it's tough. It's one of the bummers about how quick we get information,
Oh,
that
yeah.
you can quickly get put off something. But when I was 20 years old, I was making short films on Hi8, ripping off After Hours, pretty much at my in my second year at university. When Kane Parsons, meanwhile, at 20 years old, is making Backrooms and making more money than any movie in the history of A24. I mean, that's pretty crazy that
Yeah.
that could happen on a first thing. So this is we're coming to this obviously, this is already late because we're a few days after thing, but between this and Obsession, we have this run of a couple movies making more money than anything's made in quite a long time. Obsession had the third week in a row where it went up, which hadn't happened since E.T. So that tells you a lot about the moment we're in, which to me is very exciting. But did you go to Backrooms?
I did, and I took 5 kids with me. I shouldn't call them kids. I took 4 teenagers and Strummer. And so I literally
That's so
rolled in.
interesting, isn't it? The age that people are just all wanting to see it. It's all young. I mean,
Yeah,
mostly young
it's.
people going.
And that was the thing is like I'd even texted a couple of people beforehand and been like, is there anything in this? And they were like, yeah, there's like some scary, weird horror moments. You know, there's like some weird body stuff, but nothing sexual, which is always kind of where I draw the line.
Wait, no. Renata Rinsby's always sexual. She's in it, so I'm feeling sexy.
So
No.
you're sexy. But yeah, it's literally like devoid of that. So I was kind of like, you know what? I'm okay with it. Like they know jump scares and they're okay. And they've all seen the videos online. So they know the lore better than I do. So I.
Surprisingly depressing subject matter for a young person to A, want to make, but B, for young audiences to be flocking to, the actual core of like people going therapy and things that are very middle-aged. The weird thing about this movie is the actual movie of it is very
It's
middle-aged,
very adult. It's
which
very
is
like,
not what you
let me
expect.
talk about my divorce in
Yeah, no, it
therapy
was
and
not a
how I'm viewing myself now. But what was weird is walking out of it with 4 13-year-olds in tow. Like Strummer just walked out and was like, that was cool, Mom. The 14-year-olds were hyperanalyzing it, where they were suddenly like, wait, so was the pirate thing in the maze the way that he saw himself?
Okay, this is great because this is the exact experience I had. So I went with Star opening night, my friend and editor, and he brought his 3 kids. I've seen a lot of movies with them because they go to every horror movie, and usually 90% of the time they don't really say anything afterwards, and we talk, and they just stand around listening, going, "Oh, that's interesting." We walked out of this, and both me and Star were like, "Well, it was interesting, but I personally was a little outside of it the whole time. I thought it was very nice to look at, but I was like, okay, it's." Okay, like it didn't knock my socks off the way Obsession did. And then they started talking about it, and they had really interesting analysis. They had also seen many of the videos and of the previous incarnations of this IP over the years, and they were telling me all, especially about the ending. They were like, these are they're reflections of the people in these places. And all the stuff that didn't even cross my mind when I was watching the movie was like, what? Okay, I didn't pick that, but that's because I knew nothing about Backrooms when I entered. So,
My
but it was
kids.
cool to see. It's exciting to see people bring up something they want to keep talking
Oh,
about and
yeah.
expand,
No, and that's what I loved is that the 13-year-olds were suddenly like explaining to me how when he went in and the 2 chairs were attached together and he couldn't separate them the very first time he went in, that meant that he could no longer control the maze. It was controlling him.
Oh,
But
wow.
she went in and the very first thing that she did was move a chair. And therefore, she can control the maze at this point. Now, I was like, this is like some next level stuff. And I don't know
Interesting,
if it's
yeah.
true or not, but the fact that they were suddenly like analyzing a film on the level that I expect my freshmen to be doing
Well,
it,
and this is what we
it's
did when we were at
great.
college when we were going to David Lynch movies. And that was like the high point of my cinema going life is seeing Lost Highway and walking out and having to think about what it meant and having to like then want to read about it and then talk to other friends about it. And it was really one of my favorite things that got my brain going and more turned on to cinema. So to me, this is very exciting. I found the film to be incredibly effective when it was just, and I've read this a lot as well, so it was didn't feel like an original take, but this is how I felt, was every time it was doing something experimental, every time it was doing something like found footage, it completely worked for me. And every time it became a drama, I was like, I've seen this before, I don't care. And it kind of kept me out of the actual movie. I think they could have pushed further and trusted his like YouTube experiences and the things he's made before to, I could have watched 10 more minutes of somebody just walking through an empty space. Versus when it comes to trying to put it into something that we understand. I don't know if I needed that. I had moments where it reminded me of VHS movie, the VHS films and things like that. But the design is so good. The
Oh,
visual,
yeah.
I think if I had seen this before Severance existed, and I know this is the idea of this came before Severance, but Severance definitely took away some of the surprise. I remember that first time I saw Severance, the first episode, I was like, wow, look at this design. Like, and clearly this, we're in a similar kind of world, you know. Not to take away from it, but I do think it's very exciting that people feel this way. I just sometimes it got a little too close to explaining itself, and then it backed away, thankfully, the Mark Duplass storyline a little bit.
Yeah, I was grateful that they never really pushed too hard
No, I
on
agree.
that. And that the movie, and this isn't a spoiler, it began by him saying, like, what the fuck is this place? And it ends with a, well, what the fuck is this place? Like it kind of just never really resolved that because I was so fearing that we were going to go in and, oh, it's a government experiment, or you've actually been dead the whole time, or this office burnt down 10 years ago, or whatever the fuck it is. But they spent the entire movie trying to figure out what it was and never resolved that. And it's not a spoiler in any
No, it's just,
capacity. It's
it's like the
just
lore is
because
endless,
you're still
basically.
going to get a story in there. So, yeah, this was super simple. I agree. You know, it's like three actors. So clearly all the money went into production design. Two, it's mostly two actors. But that said, they've already said that there's likely going to be a sequel, and I'd watch another one with gusto. So,
Well, and I think
yeah.
they mentioned things like, you know, anthology style, and I think that would suit this a lot because of the kinds of stories you're looking at. And I mean, it made 80 million in its opening weekend. I mean, that means that these people, it's such a different version of IP than we're used to. But people were so excited, and everyone I know who went said that the crowds were mostly under 19. So it's like,
Yes.
and
And
that
I've
is weird for the material. When you watch the movie, I get that on concept, but it's not Minecraft, right? You watch this and you go, no, this is pretty dark. I mean, it
It's
was,
heavy.
it was heady, and it maybe tonally it was very close to what's our favorite Nick Antosca show that we
Oh, Channel Zero. It felt very No End House. It
Yes,
definitely
exactly.
had a lot of notes of No End House, but No End House is very much based on a creepypasta that is liminal by
Right,
nature.
so
So,
all these things are connecting with these
yeah.
words. But either way, the 1-2 punch we've had, and then we have a couple other, you know, great, good looking horror films coming out this year. This is a great thing. Anyone bemoaning the age of the directors, I would always like, and I was almost going to do it as my did you know, but like, you know, you go back through the history of movies, and this is not a one-off, you know. Orson Welles
Yeah.
is 25 when he makes Citizen Kane, but PTA is very young. I mean, a lot of people were making it. 20 is very young, obviously, but because he already had a following on a platform for years.
He'd been making
Yeah,
stuff.
it's like, and I think it's a lot of young people are making stuff in a different way than we're used to. I was talking to a friend this morning about it, but the way we grew up, like making Super 8, and you have to organize everything, and you get your friend to bring some fake blood, and you do all the, it's like a communal experience, which is why I love filmmaking. This is a different type of filmmaking. This is growing up by yourself in a room, and you can actually control all the elements using Blender and other effects. And that's a different type of movie making, a very different type. I'm probably still more drawn to, like, when I watch Obsession, I can see the handmade quality of the group making it. When I see Backrooms, it does feel a bit more like in that Kubrickian, one person has created this thing. But it's exciting either way. It's a good sign for all of us and for horror. And, you know, if you enjoy movies, I think you'll find something in the mix, which is great.
Yeah. And I will say, just thinking about, you know, that this is not a one-off, that we've had these explosions of horror before. You and I have talked about how 1988 was like a peak year of horror. And this is just a quick sidebar. Elric and I always joke that we always want to be talking about new horror. We never want the podcast to become something like we're going to revisit Child's Play for the 50th
All
time.
right, yeah, we know.
But I got to say, I revisited Child's Play this week because my kid had a bunch of the teens from the neighborhood over. It's like the whole street full of like teenagers has been gathering at my house watching horror films. And last weekend, they all watched Child's Play. And I was just poking my head out of the living room because I could recite the movie, but it was so heartwarming to hear the screams
Oh, yeah.
echoing out of my living room
That's
and
so
then
great.
being like, oh God, the movie still works. It still fucking slaps. And they all know who Chucky is, but none of them had actually seen it.
Well,
And
also in the
so,
first one of so many of these things that become jokes because Chucky now has so many other things, Freddy has so many. But when you go
he's
back to part
shtick,
one,
yeah.
part one of all these things is always scary and always works
Always.
because it's an unknown and it's quite realistic, that film. Well, the first part, obviously not the voodoo ceremony in it. But yeah, no, that is nice that you can kind of relate. I had that with Face Off this week where I hadn't watched it and I had literally not probably seen it in almost 20 years. And I showed it to a class as like my final screening because I was like, we're talking doing genre. I'm like, wait till you see this movie. None of them have seen it. It blew the fucking doors off.
Really?
Like we're
I
all
need to
like, this is the
rewatch it.
greatest movie ever made. I almost said to them, I don't know if anyone needs to make an action movie after this because it's like it has everything, and it's also really long, so you'll feel like the movie's about to end, and then there's another 10-minute sequence of just insanity. No, it was my favorite when it came out. It was my first year of college. I remember we all just loved it, and I just yeah, it's so cool what movies hold up, you know, from that era. So,
Okay,
yay.
well, I'm going to jump us into television for just a bit. So I'm going to take us over to the new Netflix show, The Burrows. Now, this is an odd one because first created by Jeff Addis and Will Matthews, who I'm not familiar with, but executive produced by the Duffer Brothers. And so when you log in to Netflix, it comes up and it's like from the people who brought you Stranger Things, and that's what they're really billing this as. For the first couple of days on platforms, this was showing up listed as horror. And then it changed to science fiction, which I'm kind of intrigued by and want to ask somebody about, but fair enough. But here's the thing. This is not sci-fi in any capacity. This is straight up cosmic horror. This is like eldritch shit. So fine. They can call it whatever they want to call it to bring it back into Stranger Things territory. I'm guessing that it was kind of a Duffer Brothers, you know, people were being put off by the horror stuff and they wanted to get that like Stranger Things explosion. But that said, it's straight fucking horror. This is about a retirement community. It is a story about older generations in a place kind of like the Villages in Florida. It's this like planned retirement community where they have all these different clubs and activities and all these things that you can do and join the cheerleading squad or join the racquetball team or whatever it is. This guy who is moving in, his wife really, really wanted them for to move here. And as they were getting ready, they signed the papers, bought a house in the area, in this particular community. And right as they were getting ready to move there, she had a stroke and died. And so he is now widowed, and they will not let him out of the contract, and he does not want to be here. And so he is now being forced to move in here. And he's pissed off about that while he's still mourning the death of his wife. This is played by Alfred Molina, who
Oh,
looks
I
like
love
Josh
Alfred.
Forbes would in 30 years in this
Huh.
show. I kid you not, watch
He'll
it. You're
take
going
that
to.
as a compliment. Alfred Molina is the great scientist in Species with the great sex scene with her, one of my favorite scenes in a 90s movie. I love that.
And he gets here and he finds, immediately discovers that he really likes his neighbors. And these are all very kind of rethinking older individuals. It feels like a lot of kind of ex-hippies, you know, ex-punk rockers. They're all very free thinking. They're all kind of like reliving their youth. They're doing yoga on their front lawns while smoking a joint, listening to music. It's just a really fun bunch. And his neighbors are Gina Davis, who is an art teacher, Alfre Woodard, Bill Pullman, and they're just really fun. But he starts getting echoes that there's other stuff happening in this community. Like there seems to be some weird deaths, or are they weird, or is everybody there just old? There's a lot of signs of dementia in the populace, or is there, or are they just old? And this is all in the first episode, so not too far into the spoiler territory. But his very first night staying in the brand new house, Ed Begley Jr. shows up, frantic, paranoid, with a knife, screaming, "This is my house. This is my house. Where's my wife?" And threatening to kill him, saying that there's things in the walls. And they come, they take him away. They say that he's, you know, suffering from Alzheimer's. This is just an outbreak. He used to live in the house, so he thinks this is his house. His wife died. And that sets him on a path of kind of like, well, what the fuck happened in my house? I won't go past that. I will just say this does get super kind of eldritchy cosmic horror. In the path that it goes. The cast is great. Not every episode is an absolute banger. Like, I finished the first episode and I was like, wow, this is epic. I
Yeah.
have to keep going. The second and third were a little bit more difficult to get through, and then it started picking back up towards the end. How they're going to keep this going into subsequent seasons, it is a TV series. I'm not too sure. But that said, it definitely does interesting stuff throughout the season. So, The Burrows, I think you would actually enjoy this because the acting is so good.
I like Alfred Molina, and I will also use this moment to say, as you're talking about TV, once again, if you're listening to our show and you are not watching Widow's Bay, you are actually missing
Oh
the
my
best thing of
God.
the year, period, the end. I watched the newest one last night, and there's an actress in this show who is just making, I'm just like, where has she been forever? And she is one of the greatest actors ever, as is the main guy. It is just so tonally perfect, and I will just keep banging the drum like everyone I know who's seen it has been banging the drum for it. So
Oh,
it's
yeah.
be catching up now, which is great, but man, is it a good show. Okay, so to finish the obsession, Red Room, not Red Rooms, Back Rooms, the other one that people aren't talking about as much, but actually it's kind of even crazier when you think about the success.
This is the kill one.
No, well, I don't know. This is the one by the
Hold on.
YouTube. This is by the YouTuber, gamer who had a huge follower, Mark Fishbach, Iron Lung.
Oh, I've seen this.
Oh, you've seen Iron Lung? Okay, so
Yeah.
this is the one I had the least interest in back when it came out because I only heard about it as a because I didn't follow him, didn't know who he was. Also, I imagine it would look really crappy and shitty and be cheap or something like that. Was what was in my brain. But I took the time now that it's going to be coming out soon to he released it to YouTube first actually, which I thought was really cool. Given his following now, everyone younger who follows this stuff all know who this guy is and he's been around forever. I was just kind of curious because this one. Given the nobody behind it, I mean, this didn't have big studio push the way the others. This was completely indie and it still made a shit ton of money.
But it did star Markiplier, which is a big deal if
Well,
you're
that's him.
13.
No, but that's him. Mark, he is Mark
Yeah.
Markiplier.
No,
Yeah,
but
Mark
that's the
Fisher.
thing is like
Oh, it
the
was just
fact
his
that,
following. No. It was the only people who are seeing this, I think, were the people who are following. But the fact that it made, I don't know what the numbers were now, but I thought it was like 40 million or something. That was just people who follow him. It was not the people like me didn't even know what this movie was. It went into a theater. I wouldn't have even known it existed if I didn't listen to the big picture as I which mentioned it. So this the write up, I couldn't tell you exactly what some of the story was as I was watching it. It says in a post-apocalyptic future after the Quiet Rapture, a convict explored a blood ocean on a desolate moon using a submarine called Iron Lung. I got all that. What I was impressed with, a couple of two things really impressed me about this. One, it reminded me a lot of Headhunter in terms of it felt like a self-made thing that the person is just creating completely their own world. And Headhunter obviously is very impressive, but it also has a bit of Carpenter because it's got the dark star and a little bit of the design of Escape from New York in the thing. And it's basically this guy who's this Mark Fishback or whatever. He has a couple different names, I guess, for his online name, as this kind of convict who has been sent down to these lower depths and all of that stuff about the future. I didn't really click to, but what I did like is just had this weird X-ray photo thing he would take where you'd see this weird creature skeleton getting closer and closer, and a lot of it is like that internal a little bit of Event Horizon too, like the internal madness that goes with being stuck inside the thing. But I was really impressed with the way it looked and felt, and it was a real movie, which I didn't think it was gonna be. I thought it was gonna be something just a lot more self-made than it actually is. It's shot well. And the biggest surprise was I thought he was really good and I was not expecting it. I was like, oh, I didn't, because he's not in my mind. He wasn't an actor. He's a YouTube person. He holds the movie together pretty well and is actually quite a likable presence on screen. So I can see why. But again, I know nothing about his world. All I knew is that 80,000 gallons of blood was used for this movie, which is the world record after Evil Dead, the remake. And it works. They show this on screen towards the end. And I was like, it was worth watching. The last 10 minutes is pretty metal in this movie. And I actually really kind of dug it. Kind of for people like Mandy, you'd probably dig the end of this movie. You know what I mean? But it was cool. But it really does. I mean, this was earlier this year, same kind of concept of somebody bringing their following in. Obviously, the Terrifier movies are another example of building your own audience in different ways, and then bring that audience to your bigger release theatrically. So
Well,
this is very interesting. Yeah.
this one helped by the fact that it's a video game. Iron Lung is a video game
Right, that he
before.
loved and he wanted to, by David Szymanski,
Yeah.
and he adapted it to be a movie. And then he also
So I
included his listeners,
played
yeah.
I'd played the video game a couple of times because people had sent it to me saying, like, oh my God, it's Aquatic Horror. And it is. It's totally like
Yes, this
Aquatic
is
Horror meets Event Horizon, which is why I'd played the video game a couple times. And this, I knew something was up because I had a number of young people, I'll say like in their 20s, in the movie that I was shooting when this did theatricals, like in February. And they all went as a pack to see it. And in the meantime, I'm like, wait, what is this that we're going to see? And it was playing at like a smaller theater in the town, but everybody went as a pack because they were like, no, it's Markiplier's doing it. And so it was a big deal to them. So
Interesting, yeah.
yeah.
It's a touch long, for what it is. It's like 2 hours and 10 minutes. I'm like, well, a self-contained thing is always best about 90 minutes. But it was interesting. I'm glad I saw it because I was genuinely curious about the these kind of followings. But it was definitely better than I thought it was going to be. It was kind of an interesting surprise. Any other movies? I have one more movie.
Yeah, I got one more movie as well. So this one is on Shudder, brand new to Shudder, and I was intrigued by it because it's produced by Joko Anwar, who I
Ooh,
consider just
okay.
to be an incredibly, incredibly talented Indonesian filmmaker who I can't believe has not come stateside yet. I can't believe that they have not picked him up and like given him an Evil Dead, sequel or something like that. But whatevs,
Yeah.
he's still doing his thing in Indonesia and rocking with it. So this is he just produced this. It is called Smothered, with the mothered part of it being capitalized. So cool, we get dual words. And it's apparently based off an Indonesian folktale called the Malang Kundang, and I'm probably saying that wrong. But the movie is about a guy who is a micro painter. Like literally, he like will find like quarters and tiny little things and paint like tiny little, giant landscapes on them. So he works in the micro form, and he is in a really bad car wreck and comes back home and he's got amnesia. We just had this conversation
My
last episode
favorite
about
subcategory.
is it possible? So he not only has forgotten the car wreck, he's forgotten a lot of other elements of his life. And so he remembers vague things. He remembers his son. He remembers his wife. He remembers elements about the house, but other things are kind of like past things, are kind of like big black holes now. So while he is still recovering from the car wreck and still trying to piece back together chunks of his life that he remembers versus doesn't, this woman shows up at his doorstep and says, "Oh my gosh, I'm your mom. I haven't seen you in years. I'm here to stay with you for a while." And his wife is like, "Oh no, you told me your mom was going to come before the wreck. Like you told us that she was going to come visit, or you'd mentioned her. So yeah, this totally tracks." He has no clue who this woman is. He's never seen her before. All the stories that she is telling about his youth, about the things that he did, about the things he was into, he has no recollection of any of it. And some of it doesn't track. Some of it doesn't make sense with things that he has always kind of recalled. And so there's this big gap, and he begins to think that she is not his mother. This movie, I surprisingly was kind of hooked on. I did not go in with as high as of an expectation. I will say this is not a Joko Anwar movie where it's going to be jump scare after what the fuck after craziness. This is far more as like a supernatural take on what feels like a Lifetime concept, but really well done. So I had a fun with this. I will say it also becomes something absolutely different at the midway point. This is what prompted I did a cheat sheet on our Patreon last week of movies that change their entire trajectory at the midpoint that becomes something completely different. And this is what inspired this, because at the midpoint, it suddenly reinvents itself and becomes something completely different after a certain amount of information is gained. So yeah, this felt like high class Lifetime with some pretty good scares in it. So yeah, I enjoyed it. Smothered, it's now on Shudder.
What's the one that we always recommend people by Jocko, where the first 10 minutes is just a banger with the toll
Queen of
booth?
Horror is our
No, the toll booth one.
Impetigore.
Impetigore. The opening of that is just a
That's it's
banger.
such a good cold open. Yeah,
Yeah, it might be the most
absolutely.
John Carpenter opening of anyone. Like, it's such a good opening. All right, the last new one, I saw a couple of wrecks, but I saw one that I was mixed on, but I think some people will really like it because of it's definitely a tonal choice. It's called Sick Puppy, directed by Jay Reid. And this is about the puppy of it. It's about a woman who works at a pound, and helping with or a vet. I think it's more of a vet that helps like with dogs and stuff. But she comes home to her lawn mowing husband, gardener kind of guy, big studly looking guy who also happens to keep a woman chained in the basement because he is a serial killer. But the twist of this movie is she knows that about him and has come to terms with that, even though she's a very sweet-natured, nice person. She knows that this is just what he has to do. He treats her great. They have a great relationship. This is a very, very black comedy, and very dark comedy. So and I like that. That's usually one of my favorite tones. It has moments I actually really did like. Sometimes the tone's a little all over the place and it's pretty out there. But what it does do, it does commit to its premise and kind of pushes some of the stuff. There's, quite a lot of nudity, quite a lot of just dark ideas, but it's always got that kind of somewhat goofy, dark comedy tone. What happens is at a certain point, she convinces him, after they have a issue with somebody who almost escapes, she convinces him to give it a rest for a while and to instead do making clay pots, doing pottery. And while
That
he
seems
takes
like a good
it's a good
substitution or
substitute. It's a pretty, you
like a
get your hands around it.
sister hobby.
He's our ghost. It's basically, but while he takes his break from it, something happens between her and one of her friends, and then she starts realizing now she's accidentally starting to kill people. So while he's having his break, she's somehow going and emulating the world that he used to do. And now, how will this affect their relationship? It has a lot, like I said, a lot of things in it that I kind of enjoyed. Other parts where I was like, yeah, a little outside the tone, but it gets my respect for committing to what it was. And so I think there will be people who will kind of really take to it. So that one's called Sixth Puppy. That is a new for rental. And two, I just want to mention, well, one, because I haven't been able to see it, but I know you're going to want to see it too. It comes out on today, and that is written, one of the writers is our friend Dick Grinner, and it is a movie called Chum.
Chum,
Chum.
I
And
can't wait to see this.
this is a shark movie. It had me at Alice Eve in bathing suits, which has everyone in the world. But what the only thing I want to say about this, because he can't, I'm going to speak for him to the world, because somebody already wrote something snarky under the trailer to this movie. The concept will look in the trailer a lot like Dangerous Animals, but they wrote this definitely before anyone had seen Dangerous Animals. I remember hearing about Chum. So there's already been people going, well, it looks a lot like Da well, here's the thing, guys. Dangerous Animals ruled. So maybe you get two really killer movies about people and baiting sharks. So go with it. I haven't seen it yet, though. So it'll be hopefully this weekend. I think it has a little bit of theater and mostly probably VOD. So look out for Chum, and kind of related, because the guy he wrote that idea with has one I forgot to re-recommend, but I saw it at last year's. What's the one in the Fright Fest in LA? And that's Pitfall.
Beyond
Yeah, Beyond. No, the other one. That's Screamfest.
Screamfest.
Happened. Yeah, sorry, Screamfest. And this is starring Alex Esso and Randy Couture, the fighter. And this is directed by James Condelic. It's just called Pitfall. And I think for people who aren't as into Obsession and Backrooms and this kind of horror, this is like a total opposite end of that, like very much more like a throwback 80s feeling. It is a group of hitchers, sorry, group of hikers and friends. One of them goes astray and falls down a large pitfall that has spikes. It's gone through his leg. He is now, 10 feet down or whatever. The rest can't find him. And there happens to be this kind of serial killer character roaming the woods. And it's got some really fun, big swing, old school, horror to it. So I think it's a fun antidote that is actually getting some limited theatrical. It started, I think, last week, but I forgot to mention because I had seen it at a festival. So that one's Pitfall, and we love Alex Esso on the show. So
Oh yeah.
big fan.
My last rec I will do quickly because it's perfect for summer is a book rec that I finished in 1 week. I'd had this on my shelf and I'd kind of been putting it off. This is Out of Air. And I'd been putting it off because it says it's a scuba diving thriller, but somebody else, I think it was maybe Mark or Mark Board or Bria, somebody that I trust their book opinions had been like, oh no, it goes totally Lovecraftian. This goes totally Lovecraftian. This is not a thriller in any capacity. This came out in May of last year. And it's about five friends who scuba dive together, and they tend to go on these adventures. And they specifically are kind of always like looking for treasure or uncovering artifacts. They call themselves the Salt Squad. They find this place in Australia where supposedly there's hidden treasure in a cave. And so they're determined to find it. So they travel to Australia to find this, and whoops, they find the cave and they find all these gold coins in, but they also find this weird substance in the cave that starts changing them. And so it really gets kind of color out of spacey real quickly. with them going back to the cave and becoming obsessed with this substance and what is it? And the fact that there's treasure there is kind of bringing other people because they swear not to tell anybody about it so that they can keep it for themselves and recover it. But they get completely kind of sucked into what is this substance and it starts doing body changes to them. So it really does become color out of space
Cool.
in underwater. So yeah, this hit a lot of my sweet spots. So I enjoyed it. Out of Air.
Okay, sounds good. So, moving, did you? Well, actually, I'll do this one because I really didn't think this through very well. So, I'll do it quickly. But I was out of time this week. But I was like thinking to myself with The Passenger. I was after watching that. I was like, oh, well, we've all heard the Vanishing Hitchhiker stories, right?
Oh,
That
yeah.
which is kind of, I guess, the basis when you first see this. And I was just kind of curious, like, where that kind of came from. And it's too much of a mess for me to do this eloquently, so I will just. from what I understand from looking this up, it sounds like obviously we know these as a person is driving along on a lonely night. They pick up somebody, a hitchhiker is shivering in the rain, not that responsive, and they give a certain location. Often can end up being cemeteries, and then by the time you've looked back, they're either gone or they're gone by the time you leave. But it turns out that they actually say the origins of this. Go back to what was it like? It's 1870s, so pre really vehicular cars. So it's not even just about cars and driving, and it has its roots largely in stories that have come from everywhere from Ethiopia, Korea, France, almost the entire globe has the same kind of story structure, but they just happen to be obviously for different reasons. I think some are more about premonitions and as bad omens as much as they are about, I think the American ones might be more about, people who've been lost along the roads and the warnings of the dangers of perils of hitchhiker, the perils of driving the road. But it was interesting to see that they largely was looked back at the 400-year-old manuscript, which I cannot pronounce, but it translates to about the signs and wonders that preceded the liturgical event by this priest in Sweden is the first person to write a story about this based on something they really experienced. So again, so folklore are tracing this back so far that this is not, I guess sometimes we take this for like, oh, this is
Elric,
American
I lost
folklore.
you completely.
Oh, where?
Elric, Elric,
Hello?
hold tight. You're gonna want to back up to Priest in Sweden was when you glitched out.
Okay, I'll cut my video for a second.
Copy?
Can you hear me now?
I can. You sound great.
Okay. Did you hear the title of the book?
No, yeah, it was like this is a liturgical journey into, yeah, and that's right as soon as you said kind of you got into the story was when you cut.
Okay, so this text that's 400 years old by a priest in Sweden, who was collecting, these kind of omen type stories. So it's interesting that we're talking about something that goes back to the 1800s, as a way of processing the perils of travel, basically, and strangers. But I don't know. There's something about this that was exciting because you always start to think with some of the urban legends that they feel so American in a way. This one particularly, it doesn't feel British for some reason because the road is such an American, the open road and Route 66 are such an American model. But I guess the most famous version of this is the North Carolina Lydia's Bridge, I believe it is, where a woman in white was seen. And that one would be seen in, on this one bridge. But that one has been traced back to a specific woman's actual death in that exact spot, which I thought was interesting. So I always find the ones that have a root in a real story, not just a folkloric story, to be the most interesting. Now, I don't know what any of this means, but I was interested. And that's the point of this segment, did you know? Because I did not.
Those are always some of my favorite stories from my childhood too, because there were several different variations of it in those Alvin Schwartz's like scary stories to tell in the dark, which if you were a, kid in the late 80s, early 90s, those were law. And there was a couple different variations in them of them in there. And so yeah, that's classic. Okay. For my history piece, I cheated because you weren't at trivia last week, sir, because you were
I was sick.
sick. And so I had done a round specifically for you because you had talked on, I can't remember if it was a regular show or Patreon, but somewhere you had talked about just the epicness of Richard Matheson
Oh, yeah,
and
that's right.
how, Richard Matheson, one of the most prolific horror writers ever should be up there with Lovecraft, Poe, Stephen King. He's sadly not. Like a lot of times, like if I'm asking just kind of normal run-of-the-mill horror fans about Richard Matheson, they have no clue who he is. So that's sad. So I, after we had talked about him on one of our shows, I failed to remember which one, I was like, I'm going to do a Richard Matheson round just to kind of celebrate his legacy. And then Elric was sick and wasn't there. So I brought that round to this show. So we're going to do some Richard Matheson trivia here. And if nothing else, you'll get a good Richard Matheson history.
Yes, I'll
Okay,
probably fail, but that's
ready?
okay. Yes.
That's okay. Number one, before teaming up on the Twilight Zone movie, which Matheson wrote three segments of, and Amazing Stories, which Matheson wrote three episodes of, he worked with Steven Spielberg on this film, which was based on one of Matheson's short stories, and he also wrote the screenplay for it.
Duel?
Here's your hint.
Duel?
Duel,
Oh,
correct.
yeah. A duel,
Yeah,
I love
Duel,
Duel. I always
you are
forget that Matheson,
correct.
and honestly, I kind of forgot
Yeah.
that Matheson wrote that, to be honest. I forgot that. That's good.
Yeah, it's a short story, and he wrote the screenplay for it. Okay. Richard Matheson penned the screenplay for which Jaws sequel?
Ooh. Okay. Jaws. Two?
No, Jaws 3D. He did the dolphins.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Yeah, that
I
was a
did not
wild,
know
that
he
was
had
kind of
anything.
my weird left field one.
I really wouldn't have known
Yeah.
that.
No,
Not a big
that
fan
was.
of three myself, but
I like three. I don't mind it. It's
it's got
fun. I
okay
mean, like,
parts, yeah.
it's got, okay parts. The 3D hasn't aged well, but it's got okay parts. Question number three. In the Masters of Horror series, Masters of Horror series, one of Tobe Hooper's episode was based on a Matheson short story by Richard Matheson, and his son actually wrote the screenplay. Which one was it?
So one of, wait, sir, let, get me straight. One of
It
Tobe
was one of
Hooper's.
Tobe Hooper's episodes in Masters of Horror is based on Richard Matheson's story.
Do I need to name the story?
No, you can just tell me if you remember the plot. Do you remember any of Tobe Hooper's episodes?
Is it like one with Robert Englund and
Yes, that's the one.
what's it
It's called
called?
Dance of the Dead. It's
Dance of
Robert
the Dead, yeah.
Englund, where he runs a club where they're reanimating corpses and making them dance around on stage. They call
Okay.
them, I think, loopies or loomies or something like that.
Okay,
That is based on a
so I don't
Richard.
get full credit, I get
You
partial
get
credit.
partial.
Yeah, for
Okay,
ruining.
number four. Richard Matheson's 1954 book, I Am Legend, has been made into several different movies, including 1964 Last Man on Earth, which he wrote the screenplay for, and 1971's Omega Man, and 2007's I Am Legend. Though the original book is set in Gardena, California, where does the 2007 adaptation take place?
The Will Smith one?
Yeah.
That would be New York?
Yes. New York
Yeah, New
City.
York,
I was
right.
actually a PA on it. I was a
Oh,
PA on it for a couple of nights.
I don't
Yeah.
mind that movie. I actually think that I've liked, actually, I go so far as to say this might be one of my favorite properties because I think I've liked every version of it. Like
Oh,
it's
yeah.
such a good story that it adapts very well. And I would say one of my favorite New Zealand films, The Quiet Earth, also steals the story essentially for
Oh,
a great
yeah.
science fiction movie about being the last person. So anyway, okay.
Okay, Matheson wrote several of the Poe Corman cycle films. Which of the following did he not write? House of Usher, Tomb of Ligeia, Pit and the Pendulum, or The Raven?
Tomb of
Which one?
Ligeia.
You are right, because
That one I
Tomb of
did know.
Ligeia is by Robert Towne, who went on to write Chinatown and Days of Thunder and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, I just know because I know the ones that he did write, Pit and Pendulum, Tales of Terror, and Raven, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love those post cycles, yeah.
In 1980, this Ray Bradbury book was made into a three-episode limited TV series starring Rock Hudson, and Richard Matheson wrote all three episodes. Which Bradbury book was it?
What? This is,
Yeah,
wait a
this is
minute.
a hard one.
Rock Hudson's become my favorite actor. So the fact that I don't need to know this means I have something great to
And
watch
that's why
soon.
we have a history
Oh, wait.
segment.
Wait, is this? Oh, wait. No. I think I could get it's not connected to Pretty Maids All in a Row, right? Because that Ray Bradbury
No, it's
directed that.
not.
You know, Ray Bradbury wrote that movie, and that stars Rock Hudson.
I
So,
didn't know
yeah.
that.
So maybe, that could be a weird connection, too. Anyway, okay, tell me what it is, because I
So
do know.
it is Martian Chronicles.
Oh, I don't think I ever saw
There
that. I
is
don't know
a
why.
three-part miniseries for Martian Chronicles starring Rock Hudson that was entirely penned by Richard Matheson.
That's very cool. Okay, I will be watching
Yeah.
that. That will have to be a deep
Yeah.
cut.
Yeah, this was by far the hardest one, and very few people got this right. Stephen King dedicated two of his novels to Richard Matheson, one in 2006 and then again in 2018. Name one of the novels. And yeah, this one people struggled with because they're not classic Stephen King. They were like more recent ones. So I'll tell you the answer.
Yeah, what is the new one? Because I'm not great with new Stephen King, actually.
2018, he dedicated Elevation to Richard Matheson.
Okay, haven't read that one, but I'm curious. Is it connected to the Matheson style? Is that why you think he?
To a degree. I mean,
Okay.
the 2006 one is Cell, which
Oh,
is pretty Matheson in how cerebral it gets.
That
Okay,
makes sense.
and then the last one, and this one caused debate so much so that we ended up having to Google it in the middle of the answers at trivia. Matheson in total penned 16 episodes of the original Twilight Zone, including this iconic one with William Shatner and a gremlin on a plane. What is the full name of this iconic original episode?
I mean, I only know it as Nightmare at 20,000 feet.
You got it.
Oh.
But the problem is that they have remade this a number of
Right, because the
times.
George Miller movie
Yeah.
version is
And
awesome.
every single time we as a society are flying a little bit higher. So now we tend to fly at like 40,000 feet. So each version of it becomes Nightmare at 30,000 feet. And then it became Nightmare at 40,000 feet. And so
I mean,
the fact that in
for
the
me, it's one of
50s,
the
we were only
greatest.
flying at 20,000 feet.
It's one of the most. I mean, William Shatner. It's one of the greatest on screen. Any kind. I mean, yes, the creature looks a little goofier in that one, but man, is it so? You could. It's so relatable to the fear of flying. I
It
think to
still
people.
works.
Yeah,
Oh
it's
my
so
God.
good.
Elric knows I am a horrible flyer. I hate it
Well,
so
you're a
bad to
fine
the
flyer. You're
point.
just bad at turbulence.
I am. I'm really, no, as long as the plane is level and smooth, I am totally fine. As soon as it shakes even slightly, I will grip the thigh of whoever is sitting next to me and draw blood. Like I am, and it's usually Elric. But
Yeah.
yeah, the turbulence I don't handle well at all. And
That didn't go
I
well.
try. I deep breaths. I've tried drugging myself beforehand, and the drugging myself is actually worse because I will still wake up during the turbulence and then I'll have a very confused freak out. So I don't like drugging myself before I fly. I do better trying to talk myself out of my own anxiety attack with all my senses. So, yeah. But yes, Nightmare at 20,000 feet,
All
which
right.
people were like, no, it's 40,000. And I had to be like, I think that's the 80s one. And then there was lots of arguing. So, okay. So that was your
All
Richard
right.
Matheson history in form of trivia.
This was did Elric know?
Yeah.
Instead,
Did
did you know?
Elric
Did
know?
I know? I knew some. Yeah, Matheson's the best. I love the way he vibes. Hokum, Damien McCarthy's most unnerving horror yet, is now available on digital. From the director of Oddity, Hokum stars Adam Scott in a deeply monstrous horror that Fangoria says is scary enough to make a seasoned viewer's jump. Don't miss Hokum, the groundbreaking new folk horror film from Damien McCarthy. Rent or buy it everywhere you get your movies. Okay, so we are going to be take a break, but we are also entering summer. So I thought it would be fun to do something really light and just do five things we are looking forward to the summer, obviously horror related in some ways. It could be anything, books, films, experiences, anything you want to justify it as. How do you want to jump in?
Well, I did not put mine in any specific order.
I don't think I
So,
really did either, to be honest. Not ranked by
yeah.
any in any way.
So I have a feeling some of us will have the same. So in which case, if you say it, I'll go ahead and jump
I would put
in.
money to say we won't because this we always think that when we do
Really?
top tens, and I have a feeling I was so random with it. I was just
Yeah, I was pretty random too. Okay, well, I'm gonna kick us off then. And I am gonna kick us off with the Ice Tower. Nope, you just drew a blank. So I'm going to assume this is not on your list. The Ice Tower, which is coming to Shudder. This
Oh,
is a.
Lucille Hadjihovic or
Yes,
oh.
yes.
That's that bonus episode I just did. Remember, I did the interview with her, the
I
director.
know, I
Oh, okay.
know. I am so excited to see this one.
It's interesting. This one's, I mean, all her stuff's pretty slow, right? Like that's her pacing, that one. But this one has the first time she's had a celebrity, you know, Marion Cotillard, who's been in her earlier film, Innocent. But I think, yeah, you might find it really interesting because it has got a lot of fairy tale mixed
It's
with
performance
filmmaking.
based, yeah.
I
It's
think if like, but
very.
she is, if people haven't listened to that, I know I did it for Pure Cinema technically, but really I was just doing it. because she's someone I've really banged the drum for her early first film, Innocence. And she, all in that interview, she just gives so many deep cuts. Like, it's just the things that her and Gaspar Noé sit around watching, and she was throwing down things from the silent period to like 60s surrealism and weirdo horror movies. So it's definitely worth listening because it's really not about her films. We were just talking about the movies that influenced her. And so it's like a good deep cut type thing. Yeah. But there's a whole box set of her work coming out.
Ooh, so she directed a film that both Elric and I dug a number of years ago called Evolution, which is just a really weird, arty aquatic horror that I absolutely was
That's really up
enamored
there.
with. This one, vastly different. This is about a 15-year-old orphan who sneaks onto a film shoot for an adaptation of The Snow Queen and becomes kind of fascinated and starts kind of blurring the lines between reality and the movie. And I have no idea where it goes from there or where the horror comes in, but it just looks absolutely amazing. This one's coming to Shudder this month, I believe it hit
Yeah, so it
Shudder.
must be, so that's good timing. So that's coming to Shudder, and I think some people will really dig that one. I think all of her different ones have different flavors for different types of people, but the box set that is Yellow Veil and Severin are putting together. So it's all her movies in one box. So it's four films, four features.
Elric, kill your camera. You're losing again.
Boo. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I'll
Okay.
kill mine as well. There
I'll
we
just
go.
say. So yes, they're doing a box set, Severin Films and Yellow Veil, putting out a box set of all four of her films. So I'd highly recommend checking those out because they're all very different. And they all feel like modern day fairy tale fables of some kind that they feel so out of place with the modern world, which is so cool, you know? Okay, my first one, I did not know this existed. And then I went to Backrooms and the trailer came on. And I was like, what? This is the rip-snorting return of Adam Wingard in
Oh,
pure...
yes!
Yeah, and
This
pure
looks
the
so
guest
cool.
code. And I've never even heard this movie mentioned. So when you don't know that somebody
Written
has,
by Simon Barrett.
yep, him and Simon Barrett back together, it's the full guest team. But this one looks like if the guest had a huge budget, could go full Terminator vibe. This is called Onslaught. And it was one of those teasers where it popped up. It was like, who made this? And then suddenly you see Adam's name, and you're like, oh, hell yeah. This is the kind of movie that those guys probably always wanted to make. So this is a rogue squad of genetically engineered super soldiers breaking loose and a badass army sniper, who's a mom played by Adrienne Arjona, who's just great. I love her. Rebecca Hall's in this. Dan Stevens is in this. I was just like watching it going, oh man, it's like they got finally, because he did all that King Kong stuff, they finally given him a real budget to do his own kind of story. And so I am pretty psyched, and I love that I didn't even know this existed a couple days ago. So Onslaught had to be on this list.
Hell yes. Okay, my next one is going to air on the same day that this episode will, and that is the Cape Fear TV show.
Oh yeah, I remembered that after the fact, but I agree with you big time. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the prior versions of Cape Fear. They've done two. It's based on a book called The Executioners. And then they did film adaptations in 1962 and 1991. I grew up with the 91 one being Law, and now getting this new one, which is a TV show. In it, the deranged serial killer is being played by Javier Bardem, who I just love. You
Oh,
know,
yeah.
whether he's doing like the crazy indie stuff or anything, I just think he's amazing. Amy Adams, Patrick Wilson's in it. And it's being created, this was created by Nick and Tosca. So that right there, I was just kind of like, oh, this sounds like a damn good package. So this one is releasing in 2 days, and I can't wait to watch miniseries.
Yeah, it makes a really good cast. Like Amy Adams, everyone's in that. But it will be most exciting, like you said, to see the guy who played arguably the best psychopath since Hannibal Lecter in No Country for Old Men.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to see him take on the role that two other people have kind of played perfectly in their own ways, Mitchum and De Niro. So yeah, I'm really excited about this too. So in a similar kind of tone, because it's not quite horror, but more like thriller. From the novelist who wrote She Rides Shotgun and Everybody Knows, which is a really great LA noir I read last year. His new book has just come out, and I'm really excited for this one to read it this summer. It's called A Violent Masterpiece by Jordan Harper. And to me, he's like now the new king of kind of things that are set in modern day LA but feel like noirish. This one is a gritty contemporary LA noir about three people, a nightcrawler, a street lawyer, and a high-end concierge who get entangled in a conspiracy involving a Hollywood pedophile ring and the LA Ripper serial killer, exposing the city's dark underbelly of power, greed, and exploitation. So these are the he just has a great writer. If somebody hasn't checked out, but also, She Rides Shotgun was a really good movie from last year that adapted. So, definitely one of those crime writers who is just feels very contemporary. And as soon as I read what it was about, I was like, ooh, all right, I'm into this. So, a violent masterpiece I will be reading as part of my summer read.
So my next one, I can't imagine is not on your list. We were actually supposed to be at the press screening for it right now. And that is Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma. This looks so weird and so liminal and so dreamy and yet funny at the same time. It's by Jane Schoenbroom. And I am just so psyched to see what this is because it looks kind of like their take on a slasher, but their take on a slasher movie. And I just am thrilled. I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, I'm equally excited, and Gillian Anderson being in it is
Oh my
obviously
gosh, yeah.
perfect. I didn't put it on only because my next one is the one I was just slightly even more needed to put on, but I agree. I can't wait to see it, and probably because we almost did see it today.
Yeah, we were supposed to be there
But
right now.
so we'll see it in a
Thanks,
few weeks.
scheduling. But it is coming out the first week of August.
Yeah, so July 24th, the movie I had to bump that one for because the one I'm most excited about, because he hasn't made a movie in 10 years, Her Private Hell by Nicholas Winding Refn, who has not made a movie since Neon Demon 10 years ago. This just played at Cannes about 2 weeks ago. Mixed, people, some people are like, holy shit, and other people are like, what the fuck? What is this thing? And that's where you want Nicholas Winding Refn to live. It's going to be stylish. This one, even better because it has Sophie Thatcher as the lead, Charlie Melton, Havana Rosalou. And this one, it sounds more like a futuristic kind of thing. It says, I didn't know much about it, but it says, when a mysterious mist engulfs a futuristic metropolis, a deadly and elusive entity is unleashed. That's all I need to know. I was like, ooh, all right. The work he's been doing in the last decade has all been on TV, and I would say they're as cinematic as any of his movies. So I don't think there's really a difference except they're longer. And I've liked that work a lot, actually, maybe even more than Neon Demon, to be honest. So yeah, I'm all about seeing what he's up to, and I'm glad he's, and then I just heard he's finally going to do Maniac Cop himself. Well,
Ooh.
long time he was going to produce it, but the recent announcement at Cannes said he's going to do his version of Maniac. So imagine Maniac Cop, but like looking like Drive.
Oh,
It
wow.
would be pretty interesting. But we will see what happens. But that's July 24th, so pretty soon.
Okay, my fourth one is Evil Dead Burn, which the trailers look amazing for. This is coming on July 10th, directed and co-written by Sebastian Vanacek, who also did Infested. I will say Evil Dead is one of the few franchises that I now look at and say they have not had a bad one yet. They
Nope,
have
no,
not
they get all
had
good.
one yet that I'm kind of like, most franchises have the one that I look at and I'm kind of like, they'll come back for it, but it's not my favorite Texas Chainsaw. They'll do better next time. This to date has not had one yet that I didn't walk away going, well, that was a fucking banger. So I'm anxious to see Evil Dead Burn.
And I would say, in my opinion, the reason for that is it's one of the few that the IP has been controlled by the original creators.
Very much
Even
so.
though Sam's not making them, directing them, he is. They're still weighing in on every single who they pick the director, and that's such a big difference, right? For continuity. Yeah, I agree. That'll be exciting. I don't know anything about it except that one teaser where it's, and it was very much a teaser. I know there's another one already in the works after that by the Last Stop at Yuma County guy. So, my next one's a cheat. I'll mention one because I can't really pick it. I have to mention James, my friend James's film Whisper Man is end of August on Netflix, and that is a big serial killer. Crime thriller where Adam Scott from who we've just obviously seen in Hokum, who really does a great performance in this too, where his son is abducted by this guy who's been abducting children, but it was happening 20 years ago, and somebody is reenacting these crimes that were committed by a guy called the Whisper Man, who is in jail that De Niro caught, and now Adam Scott has to go to his dad, played by De Niro, and be like, you come out of retirement because you need to find your grandson, even though they're estranged. Really cool movie, and I'm excited to see the. I've seen like a few cuts, but I haven't seen the final. And you know how sometimes it's always exciting to see where it all goes. So I had to mention that one, but for ethical reasons, I can't pick it. So I'm picking. It's my cheat, and I have to pick the new film by the It Follows guy. Had to be on here because I'm like David Robert Mitchell making a movie called The End of Oak Street, where basically a suburban family in their house exit their house one day. And their house is still there, as is most of their neighborhood, from what I understand. But their neighborhood has now been transported 65 million years into the past, and they are surrounded by dinosaurs. And how will they survive? I'm like, okay, I kind of need to see how that plays out by the director of It Follows. I don't know if the, and this is Ewan McGregor and Anne Hathaway. So, it's like,
I didn't know
okay.
about this. That sounds so fucking bonkers.
And it's pretty big budget. So,
That is the least cohesive thing that I've heard
yes.
today. That's
It
wild.
isn't what I expected him to make. But the cool thing is, after this, he goes back and does his long-awaited It Follows sequel. So a long time after. So this is his big swing here. So I am for it. I didn't watch. I think there's a teaser out there already. I just don't know if I want to watch it. I think it's probably one I can go in blind. That's August 14th, but I'm excited for that.
Now I got to go hunt that down. Okay, my number one thing I'm looking forward to this summer is Midsummer Scream.
Nice.
So this, I love conventions. This is my favorite convention of the summer. And hey, Colors of the Dark might be doing a live show there. We'll see how it plays
What
out. But
month is
yeah,
that one?
that is August 7th through 9th.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we have done live shows at most of the Midsummer Scream shows, so we likely will be doing a live show again. Additionally, I mean, this is just such a good con. It's massive. Like last year, I heard they had over 60,000 people, but that said, it's so spread out, it does not feel like that. It just feels like fervorous. It's just one of those conventions that I go to where you just walk in and you feel the love. Like you just feel how much everybody loves the genre, loves what they're there for, and it's just such a great community. This is a mix of horror convention and haunted attraction convention. So it's not just kind of horror booths and horror celebrities and horror film panels. You've got like all these different haunters setting up actual haunted houses on the convention floor and escape rooms and stuff like that. So this is huge. It takes over the entire Long Beach Convention Center. Elric and I have been a big part of it for years now. So this has become definitely kind of a highlight of my summer. So right around the time that Elric is going to be coming back into town, we will see you at Midsummer Scream. I have a booth this year right next to Fangoria, I believe. So you can come find me at the booth where I should have some copies of my movies, and my book is coming out right after that. So we should have some good swag to give away too. So yeah, but come see us for the live show at Midsummer Scream.
I can neither confirm nor deny. I don't know, but if I'm free, I will. If not, you. But I do like that one. I agree. And somebody else, it reminds me, somebody just wrote to us last week that you don't. I think it was to me, and they're asking us about going to an East Coast convention, which we've never done an East Coast. As I think the furthest we got
Ooh.
across was Nashville,
Nashville,
Tennessee.
yeah.
We've never,
CC me in. I'm in.
yeah,
I'm
I got to
in.
remember what it was, which state it was. But I meant to tell you, but I'm going to tell you on air. It's much more exciting.
That's great. I was also quick. Oh, wait, you've got one more.
Well, my last one, I'm not doing something new. I have found, since I've been doing those reading challenges on Book Goodreads, I really am drawn to short books, like novellas and novels as part of that, because you kind of just want to get through a number. But this year, I challenged myself to read Coco, which had been sitting on my shelf forever by Peter Strauss, and I thought it was fantastic. So I've decided my number one summer goal is to crack open the book that has been sitting on my shelf for maybe 7 or 8 years, that we have multiple friends whose it's their favorite book. I've never opened it because it is very long, and that is Dan Simmons's Carrion Comfort. I believe J.D.
Oh.
Lifschitz even was on our show when we talked about novelistic, saying this is his number one book of all time. A lot of people have said that to me in the past, and I've read a couple other things by him that, Drew, was it Drew? I can't remember if that was the name. But obviously, we've been talking about the Dan Stevens show lately, Devil in White Silver, Devil in Silver.
Devil and Silver.
This one is about, from what I understand, I almost didn't even want to read what it's about, but I know it's an epic story about kind of secret society. I guess they're kind of like mind vampires, who it turns out are kind of behind many of the atrocities that have befallen the world in real life, because they're able to control people to do their bidding. And so I'm very curious to know more about this one. But this is just one of those things. Sometimes you put them off, and I'm like, I'll never get through this unless it's in a summer. So that's my goal. I might fail. You can go look at Goodreads and see if I even begin it. But we'll see. Hopefully I will.
Well, I was just going to quickly mention some of the books that are coming out this summer, and I will say for those of those folks on our Patreon, I'm going to do that as one of the cheat sheets this month, as I'm going to give you kind of a comprehensive list of all the major horror books releasing this summer, but just some of the big ones. Clay McLeod Chapman, who we love, friend of the show, has one coming out called Devil Inside. Chuck Wendig has one coming out called The Calamities. Daniel
Wait,
Kraus.
can we shout out Clay for one thing that he does? He has been doing on his Instagram where he'll impersonate different books or movies that influenced that book or something like that. And he did like the Possession subway scene himself. And
Hilarious.
there's just moments where I watch and go, I don't even know how you're doing all this or how you even have this energy, but hats off to you. And we should have him on for that one because that looks like a fun book, actually.
Oh my gosh. When I first met Clay, and Clay and I, we're from the same area of Virginia. We definitely kind of knew people in a similar social circles while I was in college. But when I first met Clay, I was sent to see his one-man theatrical show in New York City called The Pumpkin Pie Show. He was doing this one-man theatrical show where he just basically told horror stories from his life. And it was amazing. And it was 2 hours long of him just doing exactly what he does in those videos. And it was the most hilarious, beautiful thing ever.
Okay, that makes so much more sense, actually. That kind of explains origin story. I got
Yeah,
it.
it's great. He just is diehard horror fan and also kind of a born performer. Daniel Kraus, friend of the show, has The Sixth Nicks, which just released last week. Nick Cutter, who I'm just a huge fan of, has The Dorian, and three other really good friends of the show. Paul Tremblay has Dead But Dreaming of Electric Sheep coming out this summer. We've got Carry Me to My Grave. Christopher Golden, who I feel like we should have on soon, has that one coming out. Craig DeLuey has The Summer Fun Massacre. And then Stephen Graham Jones. Okay, his doesn't come out till October, but we love him. So he has one coming in October called Off the Reservation. So,
I just
but
saw the
for
cover
those,
for that today and it looked really
looks
good.
great. That's why I added it. Is I was like, yeah, it's October, but it's Stephen, and we got to plug it already because you know we're going to talk about it. So, but I'll have like a full, what to read this summer and when everything releases, sheet that'll be coming to our Patreons.
The one I want to read first that I didn't put on this list, but I was just curious if you read this. It's been out for a little while, but called Molka by Monica Kim, KIM as in South Korean spelling.
I read her prior book, called Something About Eyes. The eyes are the best part, which was great. I
Yes,
read that one last summer.
this is like based on, a guy who's planted cameras everywhere and watches everyone at his, his office or something. It just sounded really creepy, and I noticed that some people had been talking about it, so I wrote it down. I was going to put it on my list, but I'm just going to probably make that my first summer read, just because I like a
Ooh.
good quick new book that I don't know too much about.
Where I fell last summer, and there was one more in the series, and it has become like my summertime treat. Sarah Gran, who wrote the amazing horror
Come
book Come
closer.
Closer,
Love it. Yeah, one
which
of my
I don't know how that hasn't been made into a movie yet. I
favorites.
feel like people have tried. It's such a good horror book. So if you haven't read Come Closer, start with that. She has a series of mystery novels called, it's her detective's name is Claire DeWitt, who is like this hot mess detective who's doing cocaine all the time and all types of other drugs and is just a hot mess in general. But last summer, and then the summer before that, I read the first one. Last summer, I read the second. And then this summer, I just this week started the third of the series. And that's all there is. So, Sarah Gran, you need to write another detective novel because these have become my summertime treat. And I'm going to be sad that I'm running out of them.
Yeah, that's fun. Lastly, just a little quick car wreck to go out on. I'm just gonna wreck a book that I was just looking at yesterday. I pulled off my. I've been going through unboxing a lot of my books, and you just forget what you have. And I came across a book aptly titled "Cinema of Obsession: Erotic
Ooh.
Fixation and Love Gone Wrong in the Movies." It's from 2007. By Dominique Mignon and James Orsini. One's an academic, one's kind of a writer, a film writer, screenwriter. And it's like the history and psychology of obsessive love in cinema. And so everything from Blue Angel, Phantom of the Opera, Fatal Attraction, basically, it goes through the male controlling of the gaze, the female gaze, amour fou. It's really good. Mostly it's just like chapters broken up with like tons and tons of movie recommendations and analyses, but even goes all the way to like Wong Kar-wai, you know what I mean? So it's really good. It's a really fun, just if you're looking for, I think a book like that could be great to start summer with and go, I'm going to watch 10 of these movies this summer because what a great topic. It's one of my
Oh,
favorite topics.
yeah.
And because Obsession is all in the news right now because of the hit movie.
Well, as you're cleaning out your books, be sure to save any of the ones that you don't want, because sometime this summer I am going to host a book swap party, which I tried to do and then got I had to go do location scoutings back in December. But I've always wanted to try one where it's like a clothing swap party, but everybody walks in with a bunch of books they don't want. You smack them on a table and then you leave with a bunch of books you haven't read yet. It sounds
Good idea.
wonderful.
I like
So
that.
save all your stuff. So my last two recommendations for the show, I did graphic novels because these were recent ones that I had read that I was really into. Little Monsters by Jeff Lemire. This one came out back in 2022, so it's taken me a couple of years to get to this one. But honestly, Jeff Lemire, he could write a grocery list and I would like read that shit with gusto. This one feels like I Am Legend, but from the side of the vampires. And in this case, the only people who are left on Earth are vampiric kids. Who it's this pack of vampiric kids wandering the earth thinking that they're the last people there. And they're these immortal kids feasting off rats. And the book is specific, well, at least volume one is specifically set in Los Angeles. And it's them kind of finding out who they are, why they're there, what the adults before them did to cause this, but their own inter-society that's children-based is breaking down. So it gets really Lord of the Flies. There's multiple volumes of this. I've read the first two and they are just outstanding. So that's Little Monsters. And the last one I'll recommend, I just read yesterday. So, and it was fun. I read the whole thing in one sitting. This is Black Stars Above. This is from 2020 from Vault Comics, who definitely turns out some hits. And this is by Lonnie Nadler, who I had not read before, but I definitely would read again. This is set in 1887 in the winter wilderness of Manitoba, which is where I just shot. And let me just continue to say, it gets down to like negative 30 and negative 40 there. And that's not Celsius or Fahrenheit, because after it gets that fucking cold, there is no Celsius or Fahrenheit. It's just all one. So really cold. In 1887, it follows a female fur trapper who is living this very isolated life in a forced marriage. She really is just miserable. And so trying to escape her marriage and run away from her overbearing, abusive husband, she takes a job delivering this weird package to this weird town. And the whole time she thinks that she's being stalked by these weird creatures in the woods. And she discovers that she's transporting something kind of cosmic. This gets super Lovecraftian by the end, but it was really cool to see Lovecraft translated into 1800s fur trappers in Canada. And this was nothing I was expecting. I went in expecting it to be kind of more about the fur trappers themselves and war or things like that. And no, this went totally fucking cosmic. So Black Stars Above.
All right. Well, that takes us to summer.
That takes us into summer. So thank you guys. We will be back in about 6 weeks or so with another episode. In the meantime, we will be running our Patreon show and we'll be posting our Patreon episodes on the regular Colors of the Dark feed so you guys can get them as well. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for the support. Please join us over at Patreon for all the good stuff. That is our Deep Cuts Patreon for all the good stuff while we're on break. And otherwise, I'm going to go get in my camper and hit the road.
Nice. Don't watch Passenger then.
Thank you all. Have a good one.